From WBEZ Chicago, I'm Natalie Moore, and this is Making Stories Without End. Here, I take you on a journey to learn about daytime soap operas and their broad reach on television. Many people don't know that the serial started right here in Chicago. Join me as we talk about the social impact, history, and lasting legacy of television's unique immersive storytelling. Queer television representation left a lot to be desired in the 1970s, 80s, and 90s.
Come and knock on our door.
Come and knock on our door.
Many of TV's first were side characters, wisecracks, or one-dimensional people plopped in to elicit an audience reaction. On Three's Company, Jack Tripper was a punchline.
My being in bed with you and you being a
Tinkerbell?
People are liable to get the wrong
On Dynasty, here. Blake Carrington killed his son's lover.
Get your hands off my son.
Dad, we were...
I said get your hands off it.
On In Living Color, gay men were a cheap joke.
Hello, I'm Blaine Edwards.
And I'm Antoine Mayweather.
And welcome to Men on Films, the show that looks at movies
from a male point of view.
Before the mainstreaming of Ellen, before Will and Grace, soaps did their best to bring tenderness to LGBTQ+ storylines. And it's the nature of the form. It gives room for anyone and everyone to be complex, fleshed out, loved, and hated all at once. On today's episode, we show the evolution of these stories, from side characters to legacy characters to complex depictions in their full humanity. From respectability politics to sometimes making missteps, soaps have found ways to evolve their depictions of queer life. And if they didn't get it right, they kept trying. Linda Gottlieb started her TV career in educational programming for public television. After two decades, she moved to the silver screen. And in 1987, Gottlieb produced the wildly popular movie Dirty Dancing.
Nobody puts baby in a corner.
And I didn't know what to do next. I didn't have another film project to do. And I got a call from ABC asking if I would be interested in running their soap opera, One Life to Live. I said, well, I've never seen a soap opera. I don't even know what it is.
So ABC said, we'll send you 2 weeks worth of shows, then call us back.
I called them back and I said, I just think it's terrible. I said, I think it's really slow moving and uninteresting and old fashioned. And they seemed rather delighted by my criticism. And they said, well, if you take over the show, you can do whatever you want with it. And that really interested me.
Gottlieb, who had a master's in Russian studies from Columbia University, signed on as executive producer of One Life to Live in 1991. In the land of soaps, the EP is the head honcho, in charge of 52 weeks of drama, a $50 million budget, picking the actors, running the storylines. To shake up the story, she first asked a question.
Who would I cast as the head writer of this show? And I thought, well, if he were alive today, I would cast Charles Dickens, because that guy knew how to write a soap opera. He knew how to create suspense, and he would always leave his readers wanting the next installment.
The dependable cliffhanger. Gottlieb approached Michael Malone, an English professor who had a PhD from Harvard.
He said, oh, no, that's ridiculous. You know, I teach at Swarthmore. Why would I want to write a soap opera? And I said, think about it, Michael. Anyway, his teenage daughter, who indeed knew soap operas, said, Dad, that is so cool. You've got to take that job. So he eventually took the job, and I said, if you do this, I'll surround you with people who know the form.
Malone started brainstorming.
He was very interested in introducing a character who was a minister, and that the subject of religion or church or the role of people like that could be very interesting to explore dramatically.
He explored those themes through a minister and with a gay teen named Billy Douglas. Here's Billy in 1992, confessing to his best friend, Joey Buchanan. The Buchanans are one of the core families in fictional Landview, Pennsylvania. The actor playing Billy is Ryan Phillippe in his first breakout role.
You gotta promise that if I tell you, you wouldn't say a word of this to my parents.
Billy, I don't hang out with them. Wait, does this have anything to do with Alana?
No. Well, yes, yeah, sort of.
But have you and Alana done something?
No, I haven't. And no, she isn't. I understand.
Well, then what is it?
Joey, I'm gay.
What do you mean you're gay? Is this some kind of joke or something?
I knew I shouldn't have told you.
Billy, wait.
It's okay, man. You're not gonna get it.
I didn't mean.
It's not contagious, you know.
I'm sorry.
Okay? Sorry for what?
I don't know.
Maybe that's it. You don't know because you don't understand.
I don't know what to say.
Then don't say anything.
It just surprised, you know. It surprised me.
And you don't know what to say?
Yeah.
Then don't.
Okay.
Gottlieb says the One Life to Live writing room enthusiastically developed this coming out story.
This was not traditional, you know, putting people in dry ice and awakening them again. This was the way America was, and it wasn't being acknowledged. And why should soaps hide their eyes from it? Soaps should lead the way. So we were modeling the idea that not only was it okay to be gay, but you could talk, that there were people you could talk to about it. There was perhaps a minister or somebody in your community that you could talk to.
Billy confesses to his minister, Andrew Carpenter, a lovely man who embraced and accepted the teen. No fire and brimstone sermonizing to damn Billy to hell. That, too, pushed boundaries.
And indeed, to show a minister who was, as you say, not fire and brimstone, but compassion and love. And that made everybody, we were all excited about that storyline and in favor of it.
Alas, Billy's homophobic parents were not supportive of their son and blamed Reverend Carpenter.
Billy, no matter what's happening, I'm your minister. And I'm going to help you. I'll do whatever I can to help. And I'll support you till you make peace with these feelings that you have. And you don't have to do anything.
Hey, you get away from him. You don't touch
him.
You got
him. He didn't do anything. He never did anything.
What are you threatening him now?
Dad, he's not threatening me.
Now,
I don't know what you're getting.
Billy, I do not expect a young man to understand what somebody like this is trying to do to you. But you tell me
what kind of counseling could you have gone to the Reverend Carpenter for in the first place?
And it was really very exciting. It was. We got letters from young people all over America and from Canada, thanking us, from young people saying, I never thought I could see myself before. And so they saw themselves in the Billy Douglas character. And it was things like that that made doing this work so exciting and I think meaningful.
There is a caveat to this story. Gottlieb said when she told the network the writers wanted to have a gay teen, executives told her the person couldn't be a core family member, not a Buchanan. Presumably, they didn't think the audience would be ready for that. Billy Douglas eventually drifted off the One Life to Live canvas. He was never a permanent player, and of course, the actor Ryan Phillippe went on to achieve Hollywood success. But the storyline helped push the acceptance of gay people in popular culture in the mainstream more than 30 years ago. And Billy Douglas also paved the way for a core character to come out in the following decade on All My Children. More on that after the break.
How does AI even work? Where does creativity come from? What's the secret to living longer? TED Radio Hour explores the biggest questions with some of the world's greatest thinkers. They will surprise, challenge, and even change you. Listen to NPR's TED Radio Hour wherever you get your podcasts.
WBEZ is supported by Impact Grants Chicago. Over 400 women come together in a unique model of collective giving. Each member contributes $1,000, and together those donations grow into $100,000 grants for Chicago nonprofits that address critical challenges across the city. By pooling resources, individual gifts multiply into greater impact. Listeners can learn more about Impact Grants Chicago and past grant recipients at impactgrantschicago.org/join2025.
In 1988, All My Children's Erica Kane gave birth on screen. It was a tough delivery in which baby Bianca almost died. Fans love to see it. Their beloved Erica had a baby, the next generation. But young Bianca Montgomery suffered quite a bit as a child. Kidnapping, a rare disease, catching her mother cheat on her father with his brother, almost burning down the house, Erica losing custody and Bianca moving off screen to Seattle to live with her dad, anorexia, running away from home back to Pine Valley. And that brings me to SORUS. That stands for Soap Opera Rapid Aging Syndrome. It's when a young character quickly ages in a way that doesn't match the birth year. Think how a baby is born on a TV show and then 5 years later is headed to high school. Various actresses played Bianca over the years, and by and large, the storylines matched Bianca's birth year. But the character needed to be aged, and a new face was needed to play 16-year-old SORUS Bianca. Eden Riegel won the part in 2000.
Bianca was like the golden child, the one who was supposed to like carry on Erica's mantle, her legacy, because there was so much pressure on Bianca to live up to her mother's expectations, to be as beautiful as her mother and successful as her mother and perfect as her mother, because the audience was so invested in her. They had been there for her birth. They felt like they knew her. They had the same, you know, maternal feelings toward her, the love, but also the, well, I want her to be a certain way. You know, people had their own expectations for the character, too. So I think Agnes enjoyed playing with that.
When Rigo joined All My Children, a producer filled her in on a secret that hadn't been told to her during the audition process.
The lighting was dim and we had tea and everything felt really serious. She was like, I have to tell you, the nature of the storyline is that Bianca is going to come out as gay. And I was a kid. I was like, okay. And I felt this expectation that I should have some sort of reaction, but I grew up in theater, you know, like it was very common for me to, I was surrounded by the gay culture and gay people and I didn't see what the big deal was. And then once it became clear to me that this was a huge step for television and a huge step for the show, then I realized that it was a great opportunity for me and I was really proud that I would be able to tell this story.
Rigo wanted to do a good job and make Bianca relatable. She strived to be sensitive and honest. She felt a huge responsibility.
I talked to my sister, who is gay, and I said, you know, tell me what you would hate to see and tell me what you would like to see. And she gave me the freedom. She was like, you know, we're just people. Just play her as a person and you'll be fine.
Now, the audience didn't know off the bat that Bianca was gay. Erica Kane wrapped men around her finger, broke hearts quicker than a dropped egg. What would it mean to have the daughter of a vixen be a lesbian? Slowly, the audience learned of Bianca's sexuality while Erica was in the dark.
The coming out scene, it was designed as a mother-daughter modeling gig. Erica was, it was sort of Bianca's coming out to the world as like a mini Erica. And we were dressed exactly the same and our hair was exactly the same and our jewelry was exactly the same. And there's a scene where Bianca feels like that Erica's looking at her and not seeing her. And she starts to strip away all the things, take her hair down, take the jewelry off, take the dress off until she's like down to her slip.
I want you to go.
Look at me. I want you to see who I am, Mother. Can you see who I am? Can you? I'm trying to show you.
What is it? wrong. There's something terribly wrong with you.
No. No. You just won't look.
I'm looking. I'm looking at my daughter standing half naked in my living room when we have a press conference. We have dozens of reporters and
Mom,
magazine editors waiting for us,
Bianca. Weren't you listening to David when he tried to tell you who I was? Or Uncle
Erica refuses to acknowledge her daughter.
Have you always loved me, Mom? Have you?
How could you even ask me a question like that?
Do you love me now?
Bianca!
Do you?
Yes.
I'm gay.
The shot ends with Erica's stunned face. It's Friday. It's a cliffhanger. All My Children creator Agnes Nixon said she knew the audience would stay tuned to follow how Erica would react. They were invested.
Agnes thought that if every person just knew a gay person, that would open their minds and they would see that, oh, they're no different. And so I believe that Agnes, because she was so brilliant, knew that the soap characters were like family to all the Americans who watched them. And they sat with their real family and friends and talked about their stories. And it was like gossiping about their actual extended family. And Bianca, especially because they had watched her birth and they had watched her grow up and they had seen her through Erica's eyes, they already loved her. And so that if Bianca was gay, of all the people, that she was the most likely to find acceptance in the audience. And Agnes also knew that what the audience really needed to help them get there was for Erica to not accept her daughter right away, that Erica had to go through the journey and that the audience could be ahead of her, rooting for her and pulling her along, and that that's how they would get in, that's how Agnes could get into their hearts, by having them be ahead of Erica in the acceptance.
Erica struggled. She even tried to change Bianca. Mother and daughter were estranged. Bianca was hurt.
Over time, Erica learned to accept her daughter and eventually became a full-fledged supporter of who she was, you know, a P-flag mom.
And sure enough, fans wrote letters of support. One of Regal's favorite stories came from a friend of a friend.
And the son was coming out to his family and was very nervous about telling his older Italian grandmother the truth about who he was. And he didn't know what she would say, and he was scared, and he told her, and she said, "Oh, just like Bianca. Bianca's great, so I'm happy for you." And he couldn't believe like how easy it was, because she had seen it on her show.
As a member of a core family, Bianca was ensconced on the show. She didn't fade to black after coming out. She had many storylines, some about dating, others pure soapy drama that had nothing to do with her sexuality. And the show didn't shy away from another first. In 2009, Bianca married Reese Williams in Daytime's first legal same-sex wedding.
Bianca and Reese, I charge you both, as you stand before God, to remember that love and loyalty will serve as the foundation for a happy and enduring home.
A smiling and radiant Erica Kane sat in the front row.
It was like I was in a deep sleep. Before you, I was in a timeless fog, unable to see past yesterday and unwilling to hope for happiness that tomorrow might bring. And then you came along. And you brought the sun with you.
Daytime veteran Tamara Braun played Reese and felt the strength of soaps taking the time and care with the couple's relationship. Shows about lesbian characters can't seem to stay on the air, even in 2024. Queer characters, yes, but not lesbian-centered.
I mean, I'd be naive to say that, you know, we live in a world where
people just accept people for who they are. But there's a lot more representation in daytime. And I think that's always important, because I think representation in all forms creates an opportunity for people who may be more isolated in their world viewpoint.
One of Bron's favorite Reese scenes was when she and Bianca were having their baby christened.
They had the priest come over, and because Reese's name is gender neutral, the priest thought that Reese was a man. And when the priest showed up, he was taken aback, and he said he would not do that. And Erica basically told him what love was about and what being a good Christian, a good Catholic was about, and that this was not acceptable. And she had him leave. I don't remember the exact words, but I remember how powerful that scene was when I read it. And then when we did it, and then I saw it, and I was moved all three times.
And that's even watching Erica Kane evolve, because when Bianca comes out to her when she's 16, there wasn't this level of acceptance.
That's everything, right? We are human. We are flawed, but we have the ability to grow. We have the ability to evolve and learn and make our choices with what we learn.
Agnes Nixon took another opportunity to bring more queer characters to the forefront. All My Children portrayed one of the first fleshed-out transgender storylines on TV. The year was 2006, before Bianca and Reese got married.
Bianca being a lesbian was incredibly groundbreaking, and that's kind of inconceivable right now. But it still is totally conceivable that the Zarf-Zoe storyline in those days was, I mean, I think we broke people's brains. Like, it was really bold. And I was so proud. Like, I don't think we did everything right. That's one where I can see, like, oh, we made so many mistakes. But it was, I'm still so glad that at the attempt, it was a really, I think, honorable attempt.
Zarf was a male presenting famous rock star on the show who formed a friendship with Bianca and found the courage to come out as Zoe. Over time, she learned to accept herself and transitioned in real time in a story over months.
And the character was played by a man, which it would have been less complicated if nowadays, I believe a transgender actor would have more rightly portrayed the role. We didn't know what we were doing.
The backlash came from people uncomfortable with the storyline, not the choice of the actor. The soap did hire transgender and queer consultants to help, but today, as society has evolved, a different actor certainly would have been hired for this storyline.
I wish it had been more successful. I wish we had gotten people to accept Zoe more. And I feel like because we didn't, then we must have done something wrong, that it's a failure. But I don't know if we just weren't ready, or we just didn't, you know, that maybe that storyline was just kind of ahead of its time. And maybe we got too bold. I know that some people were helped by it and some people related to it.
Even if that story doesn't hold up by today's standards, All My Children tried before others. Even with Bianca and Reese as a lesbian couple, there's the responsibility of making sure that you're telling the story correctly, that gay and queer people feel seen via the characters. Representation matters, but that can be burdensome. No room for error. Perfection in the characters so they are unimpeachable. Respectability politics.
I think when it's like the eighth or ninth version of the story and you can have characters that have foibles and make mistakes and everything, and it doesn't seem like it's putting that on a whole community, that it felt like we had to do things right.
Those days are over for queer daytime characters. How do you get it right with someone perceived as a bad character? We hear from a messy villain after the break.
Thank you for supporting WBEZ. You keep public media public. December gifts are among the most important because they set the tone for our reporting in 2026. Next year, we're doubling down on bringing you stories that arm you with the facts. This journalism relies on everyone contributing what they can. Join them today at wbez.org/donate.
One of the issues with LGBTQ+ characters on soaps is, what do you do if you only have one or two? Pairing them up romantically gets stale quickly. The canvas doesn't have enough queer characters for drama, love triangles. You learned in the 1990s we had Billy Douglas. In the aughts, Bianca Montgomery. These roles, and many, many in between on other soaps, normalized the shift of multiplying queer roles in the soap universe. Now let me tell you about Leo, who showed up on Days of Our Lives in 2017. He's played by Greg Rickard.
I came on as the gay villain, if you will. And to me, that felt like the ultimate. The ultimate inequality, that I didn't have to just say the right thing and follow the rules in order to be palatable to the audience. And when I would get blowback from some people for being, whether, you know, they considered Leo to be stereotypical or not progressive by way of like things that he was doing because he was bad, I would just argue all those things, that that is further pushing the envelope open by saying, yeah, we can be multifaceted. We don't all have to be good guys.
Leo was not the first or the only. A diverse canvas existed. The good gay guys on Days are Will and Sonny. Core family, by the way.
When I first started, Leo was an escort who was hired by Vivian Alamein to muck up the relationship between Sonny Kyriakis and Will Horton.
It was a short arc, 3 months, but he came back a year later.
The version of Leo that we see today is maybe untethered a little bit more, which is really fun because he can be a little more flamboyant. He can be a little snarkier and maybe just more authentic to who I think he is. I'm trying to think of all the things I've done to Sonny. Leo drugged him and took photos of them naked in bed and had them published in a tabloid magazine so that people would think that they were together. And what else have I done to him? Lots of bad things. So no, I did not. I mean, I hopped into the shower with them once, like to, you know, propose that we all have a three-way together.
Soaps are sexy afternoon delights, but intimacy pales compared to cable. Gay daytime characters historically got pecks and kisses. I wanted to know if Rickard feels like gay characters today are written in a way that the same romantic considerations are given to straight characters. Days is now on Peacock, the NBC streaming service, so the show can take more risks.
I would say absolutely yes. Particularly, again, I can't speak to the other shows, but we don't have, now that we're streaming, I don't think we have the same standards and practices to answer to. And there was a fantasy sequence last year that we did where this was kind of groundbreaking and really fun too, that I was involved in a love triangle with my best friend, who is a woman, her fiance, who's a man, who was bisexual. And I'm fairly certain that's never been something we've seen on soaps before, where it was a man and a woman fighting over the same guy. And there was an episode where the character of Dimitri, played brilliantly by Peter Porte, is celebrating his birthday. And Gwen, played by Emily O'Brien, also brilliantly, presents him with a cupcake. And she then proceeds to he's in bed and she proceeds to go under the covers. And the implication is that she's going to perform oral sex on him. And then because it's a fantasy sequence, what happens is then Leo pops out from under the covers, because in Dimitri's fantasy, it was Leo under the covers. And I remember as we were shooting it thinking, everyone that watches this is going to know exactly what is happening under these covers. And that's certainly something I cannot imagine we would have seen 10 years ago.
I can't imagine that either. Unlike the characters who played Bianca Montgomery and Billy Douglas, Rickard is gay in real life. I used to watch him on Young and the Restless. His colleagues knew he was out when he started his acting career.
Certainly when I started, we were still in this place where being an out gay actor, I don't want to say it was career suicide, but it was definitely seen as being very limiting. One day I'll say the name, but I had an acquaintance who was a very big network executive who once told me at a party, I think after she had had a few too many drinks, that she could never knowingly cast a gay actor as a romantic lead. And at the time, you know, 90-some-odd percent of roles on that I was auditioning for were for straight young romantic leads.
Did she know you were gay?
Yes.
And she still said that?
Yeah. Yeah.
But did it make you feel like you were going to have limitations in your career hearing that?
At the time, for sure. And then I think I felt, by the time I publicly came out, I think I felt secure enough in my life and my career that it was a risk I was willing to take.
Ron Carlovati was the head writer of Days. He's also been head writer of General Hospital and One Life to Live, and he's gay.
I'd say maybe where I've had the most success is as like writing LGBTQ storylines, because, you know, I wrote a couple on One Life to Live, Kyle and Fish, that was like very popular. Yeah, one was a cop and one was a doctor, or he worked in the hospital. And they, that became very popular. It was Scott Evans. He's Chris Evans, the actor's younger brother. They became very popular.
Carlovati has witnessed evolution.
And I think networks were afraid of pushing the envelope with gay stories, or that we would turn off a certain part of the audience. And so that, I think, why it was a slow evolution. And it also took a couple steps back, I think, at times when they felt that they might be losing the audience. But I found a lot that, like, if the audience likes the story and they're invested in the character, they might see past whatever prejudices or they might have. For example, I just mean a person who may not be comfortable with gay people or think they're somehow against gay people, but they fall in love with the story of watching these two characters fall in love. So the next thing you know, somebody who might have seen as anti-gay is suddenly like, you know, kiss, you know, like they get, and I think that's such a great thing, because maybe they realize, oh, maybe being gay is not so bad because I love these two and I want to see them be happy. I want to see them fall in love and live happily ever after, just like I do these other straight people.
Lynette Rice is a senior writer for the Hollywood trade publication Deadline. Soaps are her beat. She started watching All My Children with her mother in high school. I asked her if daytime was venturing into waters that primetime wasn't, or were they delving into LGBTQ+ storylines earlier than primetime?
They certainly were, only because they have so many stories they need to tell. They're on 5 freaking days a week. And so they have to constantly be looking for new stories. So yes, they've always been more progressive in addressing social issues in ways that primetime hasn't. The unfortunate thing is that soaps aren't always taken seriously for this, because they also happen to have characters who die and come back to life 40 times. There's an exorcist, you know, on one show, and people get married, you know, multiple times. So it's really hard to honor them for how progressive they are when they're doing all these like batshit crazy things the next day.
Soaps love to do batshit crazy things. And in their apex, they didn't just push social issues that were on the back burner for many Americans, but they also held whole networks on their shoulders. Their capital was not just political, it was financial. They were cash cows. How did a feminized form of art dismissed as just for housewives become the financial bedrock for the entire television industry? That's the next episode on Stories Without End. Stories Without End is a production of WBEZ Chicago and part of the NPR network. I'm your host and writer, Natalie Moore. The show is produced by Hina Srivastava and edited by Ariel Van Cleve. It's mixed by Haley Bloomquist. We had music and production assistance from Justin Bull and Dave Miska. Thanks to Brendan Banizak. Our executive producer is Tracy Brown.